Drupal Voices is short daily podcast interviews with people doing work in the Drupal community. Brought to you by Lullabot Consulting. Whether you need technical architecture, developer support, optimization and analysis, on-site training, or just general guidance for your Drupal project, Lullabot has led many of the largest Drupal projects in the world. Visit lullabot.com or call 877-LULLABOT to find out how we can help you with your next project.
My name is Catherine Lynch. I'm with Drexel University Libraries in Philadelphia, and I'll be presenting about writing and contributing accessible themes and modules in Drupal 6 and Drupal 7 tomorrow, Monday morning, DrupalCon. We're going to be starting with an overview of what web accessibility is, who it's for, describing specific things that users with a variety of disabilities, including limitations of vision, hearing, motor, and cognitive disabilities, would encounter on the web, and specifying sort of what those roadblocks, how they can be negatively impacted on Drupal sites as they are written now, and also how Drupal is helping, because Drupal is actually pretty accessible now, but there's a lot of work making it even more accessible because there are some big problems. So I'm kind of focusing in this presentation less on, you know, here's what's wrong, and more about the fundamentals of what web accessibility is, the principles of making accessible content layouts and tools for the web, and then sort of applying that for making accessible themes and accessible modules using the tools that Drupal 6 and Drupal 7 are putting out there.
So what are the main bullet points that you're going to be trying to step through for people when they're thinking about making a theme or a module?
Well, for themes, I'm going to be talking a lot about making sure that the user has access to all of the regions on a page in a way that makes sense to them, sort of navigational links, ease of perception of information. So things like color cues, you want to make sure that you're not just using a color as a cue for something. We want to make sure that the user can turn on and off content that may be distracting to them, such as movement or automatically playing sound. And want to sort of contribute in ways that if you're going to write a theme, the markup is there, that you're not using inappropriate visual markup, you're using semantically pleasing markup that works with screen readers and that works with assistive technologies. And for modules, we're also focusing a lot on making sure things are keyboard accessible and that the controls of any given module or any given page are available to a person, whether they're using a mouse or a keyboard or an assistive technology input, and also that the actions that are required of the user for any given module are not actions that a user who has any type of a disability could not perform, such as drag and drop for somebody who has a motor disability, or sort of anything that somebody could not cognitively perceive or visually perceive.
And so being at a university, maybe you could talk about like what are the guidelines that are driving either your university or all universities across the United States?
Well, there's the law, Section 508, which is a set of guidelines specifically for all websites that, you know, sort of you have to adhere to these baselines in order to make your site accessible. And I focus a lot on the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines put out by the W3C, which ties a lot with Section 508 standards, but it's basically a lot of making sure everything is semantic and using things like header tags and lists and breaking your content down into small, easily digested chunks, using alt text on images. It's a lot of low-hanging fruit that Section 508 focuses on and that is sort of catered to in higher ed, sort of making sure that, you know, a lot of higher ed websites tend to be reference points for students rather than a sort of interactive experience like Facebook or something. And so it's very important with a lot of higher ed sites and also library sites, as I work in the library, to make sure that if a user goes on the site, they're usually going to look for the answer to a particular question that they have. And so we want to make sure that they can answer that question. And if there's some kind of interface that they're going to encounter, such as in the library, we have a library catalog, they need to be able to search, find a record, find a book. We want to make sure that all users can do that and that the information's open to everyone.
And so how are you personally testing some of these guidelines that you're being properly adhered to? Like, what's the process for you to make sure that what you're doing is kind of up to snuff to all these regulations?
Well, there are a few sort of ad hoc tests that I just do on my own when coding. I use two different screen readers. I use one called Thunder, which is an open source screen reader, which has no limit to its use. And it's not the most widely used. The most widely used one is JAWS. There are a few differences in things like keyboard shortcuts between something like Thunder and something like JAWS. But basically, I use Thunder to sort of try to perceive how most screen readers would read content. And then I use JAWS to fine-tune those things. And JAWS is available as a demo for free for anybody, and you can demo it for up to 40 minutes at a time, and then it shuts off, and at that point you simply reboot your system and you can do it again. But being as it's a Windows machine, that tends to be a very time-consuming debugging process. So I use something like Thunder to debug, and then when I just want to sort of do a final run-through of things, I'll use JAWS several times, and that gives me an idea for somebody who might be using a screen reader to see if we're using it, if we're doing something right. And in terms of making sure things are accessible to users with assistive technologies, I use keyboard inputs a lot. And so I try to make sure that everything is accessible from the keyboard. There's a certain amount of graceful degradation that you can test for. So basically, once you've made your site, you can test, you know, first you turn off all of the fancy things like Flash or Silverlight or anything that's really proprietary. Then you turn off JavaScript. Then you remove the CSS, and that's mostly to make sure that all of the information that you are putting out there for the user, the presentation of information is not tied to the physical look of the site, that a person who can't perceive the look of a paragraph or a style or a page could still understand from the content what it's supposed to be. And from there, the final step is you unplug your mouse. Anne McMeekin actually is another Drupal accessibility person, and she advocates doing that as the final step, which is very good. And so basically you unplug your mouse, and you just use the keyboard to try to get around. And using the access keys on the keyboard, the tab, the arrow keys, and the escape key, you know, make sure that you can actually do everything, perform every action that a user who's using a mouse can perform. You know, obviously, if you do something like turning off Flash and you've got, you know, a YouTube video embedded in there, you're not going to see that. So what you do in that case is make sure that there is some kind of graceful and equal alternative, such as a text transcript of the content or descriptive transcript, that sort of thing.
I see. And so this emulator, it sounds like an emulator, this Thunder that you're running, what is that giving you above and beyond turning off all the CSS and JavaScript in Firefox?
Well, there is a difference between just sort of being able to see the text on the screen and then understanding the way a screen reader actually presents the information. A lot of the time, developers might sort of plug in a screen reader and see if it talks, sort of turn it on, see if the website talks. If it talks and it says all of your content, then you figure it's a job well done. But a screen reader user needs to be able to navigate around. Screen reader users may jump around only to headings. They may jump around only to lists and jump through the lists. They may jump around only to links. So, for instance, if you have a bunch of links that say, you know, click here for more information, and they see, you know, the link, click here for more information, five or six times, they're not going to necessarily know because they're not necessarily perceiving the content around that. So making sure that everything reads okay, and you can also just find things that you don't otherwise necessarily find just by looking at the text. For instance, if you write text in all caps, like a good example of that would be, you know, contact us. If you have your heading for that is written in all capital letters, a screen reader would generally read that as contact US. It takes the capital letters and abbreviates them when possible. So a way to sort of get around that is in your CSS, use text transform to uppercase. So it would look like uppercase, and if it's just a stylistic choice, then it doesn't matter if it's taken off in the CSS, and then also a screen reader would read it properly. So you can kind of pick up things that an assistive technology would have a problem with by testing with this assistive technology. A couple of other good things that you can do, there's the Firefox accessibility extension, which tests for a number of things that would come up as sort of borked with accessibility evaluations, such as, you know, these images don't have alt text on them, these tags are not closed, you know, things aren't formed properly. And there's also the Fangs extension in Firefox where you can find out in text, generally speaking, what something like JAWS would read your content aloud as. You can highlight some content, you can evaluate a page and see what each piece would say.
Now, with rich media, there's obviously going to be certain limitations for people with these devices. And is something like HTML5 video going to be any better or worse than something like Flash? Maybe you could talk about, like, you know, rich media in general.
Well, HTML5 promises a whole lot, and I think in a couple of years it may very well contribute very positively to accessibility. There are a lot of people who are hoping HTML5 will phase out Flash entirely, which would be a boon because particularly for people with visual limitations, Flash is just totally inaccessible. And so something like HTML5 would probably help in the long run with rich media. As of right now, it's obviously it's responsible to not sort of rely on HTML5. It's not widely supported, not entirely formed. So some things that you can do is to make sure that you have textual transcripts of all audio content. If you have video, you can try to put captions onto the video. For instance, YouTube released in beta as of November 09 automatic captions. They put it into limited release. It's now in wider release. It's not perfect yet, but it's a leap forward, and it's an easy way for a person who couldn't otherwise necessarily have the technology to incorporate captions into their own video, a way of sort of putting video with captions, you know, out there. And if you have something like a live video feed at the time, you can do something as simple as making a note that, you know, a text transcript will be coming as soon as this is over, and then actually do it, obviously, and when possible, linking to sort of equivalent information. So for instance, if you're, you know, have a streaming video of a news story, an ongoing news story, if you can link to the site, maybe there's a page on the site that's actually also covering it as, you know, in article form or in blog form. So you can sort of add to that. And so you just sort of try to think of good equivalent ways for users to perceive the rich media. So, and you can go deeper depending on who your audience is. With synchronized media, where you'd have video and audio, for a blind person, you can have a textual transcript that does the following, but you could also have a descriptive audio track that would, in between the dialogue, describe the action and the settings and the character, you know, sort of the characters, sort of in a way similar to, you know, Golden Age radio transcripts, the way that if you listen to Golden Age radio shows and the way that they, you know, describe what's going on in a story like The Lone Ranger, you know, they had to describe everything. People couldn't see it because it was on the radio. And so, you know, doing something like that, it can help in that regard. And for deaf users, ideally, in a situation where you would have a text transcript, it's really good if you can also have screenshots alongside each segment of dialogue in the text transcript so that they can sort of follow along. And you can add alt text to these images. And so a blind user could, you know, see the alt text on the image so they could sort of perceive what's happening, read the text, and go forward like that. And providing transcripts like this also helps with search engine optimization because it doesn't replicate your content, but it's sort of, it generates more content about a particular subject for you. So basically you can, you know, put up a video about something and then you can put up the transcript of it, and a search engine can very easily latch onto those terms in the alt text and in the text transcript and surface your results a little bit more in a more fine-tuned fashion, because people might be searching terms that might not otherwise be available to search engine robots.
And finally, maybe you could talk about like how you got into working with all this accessibility stuff.
Well, it was actually at Drexel. I took a workshop that was offered, that was a one-hour workshop. My friend and colleague Dan Allen, who works also at Drexel, taught it, and he based it on Sean Henry's writings. Sean Henry works for W3C, and she has contributed greatly to the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. You know, she's on the World Wide Web Consortium, and that was what opened my eyes to what web accessibility really encompasses. A lot of places you're not necessarily educated in this when you're just learning things like learning how to code for the web when you're a young student. You can sometimes become aware of something like screen reader markup, which I was vaguely aware of and understood sort of this is how we make it so that a blind person can see the web, can see our page, but not really necessarily aware that there are all of these different things that you can and should be doing, and something as simple as, you know, using headers instead of styling your fonts makes things a lot easier for people with disabilities. And from there, I mean, I do a lot of trying to bring the library website that we have and sort of bringing libraries on the web forward into the future and adding new interfaces and new ways to control what you can do with library records on the web. And so sort of this kind of twinned with that. So as I'm developing what I like to think of as sort of new ways to, you know, to use these tools on the web, I'm also aware that there's this rather large population of people, these users who have disabilities, who are not necessarily being left behind, but as the technology is getting so, you know, is progressing so much, there's so much, you know, so many new ways to release video on the web, and there's, you know, all of these, you know, new technologies, new interfaces. There's Ajax and jQuery making it so that you can do all this really cool stuff on a web page that you couldn't do before without, you know, making a proprietary application. And it just, you know, the web is expanding and exploding with information, and it just made me aware that there's, you know, everybody should be able to see all that. And, you know, seeing this workshop and having just the basics of accessibility laid out for me made me aware that there's a lot you can do very easily to make things accessible. But the more you do, the more accessible you make things, the easier it is for everybody to use them, and the easier it is for everybody to get the information. And I think that was really cool.
Okay, well, great. Thanks.
Thank you.